A little good news from an unexpected source and predictions for the upcoming year. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to this week-ending and, I guess, year-ending edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is my Vice Chairman, co-host, fellow analyst, and good friend, Jeff Michaels.
And I'm getting my crystal ball all shined up so we can look into the next year.
I almost hate to say the word prediction, Chuck. Yeah, it's more like our reasoned guesses as to what may be taking place across the policy spectrum.
As someone once said, I'm neither a prophet nor the son of a prophet.
So. And that's good. Well, one of the things that we could have guessed and seen coming was the United Nations has done it again, Charles. They've had another conference on global warming where they couldn't get anything done. That's right. They spent about 14 days in Durban, South Africa. And I honestly wonder if they got ice and snowstorms down there, because it seems like every other time that they do one of these conferences, they get a lot of ice and snow.
Well, but maybe that's why they did it in South Africa.
To try to avoid that.
during the South, right in the middle of the South African, the late spring, early summer. So
they failed in their two main goals, and we should all be thankful for this. Number one, they failed to put a new treaty in place to replace the Kyoto Protocols, which means they now are still stuck with the bad marketing of the Kyoto Treaty, and they're still not going to be able to get countries such as the United States, hopefully, and China and India to go along with it. The second thing...
Hold on, Barry. I think you're going to find, if you look into that China and India were more than willing to go in because they were exempted from the regulation that the Western countries were being subjected to.
Well, see, that's the key to this whole thing, Chuck. What they were trying to do was to get every country under equally binding limits, and China and India just threw a fit.
Of course, because that would make them no longer competitive with the West.
Exactly.
What makes them competitive is the regulatory pictures that exist in those two nations. It's hard to imagine that China has a better regulatory outlook than the United States and Western Europe, but the fact is, in certain instances, they do. China is one of the worst polluters on the planet. All the little Marxists run around and talk about how if we want to have a clean environment, we need to adopt Marxism in this country. And yet, absolute worst environmental criminals in the world were in the old Soviet Union and in China. So much for Marxism being the savior of the earth.
That savior is a little less than miraculous, I think.
But
you know what? A savior needs to have money to get around on, right? So that was the other thing they were trying to do, was to agree to a $100 billion global tax scheme to finance a green climate fund. They couldn't get that done either. So all of our wallets can breathe a short, slight sigh of relief. Now, we're getting all this news from our good friend Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum. Now, of course, what they did do was they formed a couple of ad hoc committees and blue ribbon panels, which honestly, that's what a lot of your leftist bigwigs like to do to make them feel like they're actually getting something accomplished.
Yeah. A blue ribbon panel, as we've noted in the past in some of our work against constitutional conventions, we've noted that the worst form of methods of picking delegates to a constitutional convention will probably be the one that gets picked, and that's a blue ribbon panel.
That's right,
a blue ribbon panel.
There were some great ideas at this Durban climate conference. Now, of course, they stopped calling it global warming because everybody knows that's a hoax. So now they're calling it a conference on climate change, because anytime the weather changes, they've got a reason for more regulation. So they had some groups that presented there, and they presented how you can reduce gas emissions 25 to 40% below 1990 levels, and national economies can be decarbonized by 2050. Now, Chuck, that scares me. That scares me a little bit, because knowing that human beings are carbon-based life forms, to decarbonize a nation, I think, means killing everybody now, doesn't it?
Well, we can laugh about that. Population control has long been a long-range goal of the United Nations.
That's right.
In fact, if you look at the sustainability work, that quote-unquote sustainability is a joke. It is antithetical to anything biblical, because God says basically take dominion and spread out over the face of the earth. And the fact is that the idea is that a sustainable number of human beings on this planet, according to these people, and where they got this number, who knows? I'm sure they can tell you it's from some kind of formula.
Well,
it's 500 million people. 500 million people is a sustainable number of people on the surface of the planet of the Earth,
and
which means that about 6.5 billion of us would have to die.
Well, that's true. But according to them, I know how they're going to sustain that by 500 million people. And that's with the Zulu Beehive Hut. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You can destroy your Cape Cod or your Tudor or your Century Farmhouse or whatever it might be. You need to be building a Zulu Beehive Hut. It's cool in the summer and warm in the winter because it's circular, has one door, no windows, and has plants growing all over the outside of it. Now, there's only one downside to the Zulu Beehive Hut, and that is there's no running water or electricity. So I don't even think the Amish would be up for exchanging their houses for Zulu Beehive Huts. But
no, I think they'd be a primary. They might even join in and protest that.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, that's okay, because you know what? There'll be more times to protest because the UN is going to continue on with this silliness because they're spending other people's money, namely yours and mine. You see, next year, in 2012, they are going to be trying to get $1 trillion a year into the Green Climate Fund. Where do you think that money is going to come from mainly? It's not coming from countries like South Africa or Qatar or Dubai or other places. It's going to be coming from the good old US of A.
Yep.
Now, next year,
as always,
next year in June, while we're teaching kids the basis of biblical constitutionalism, Chuck, they're going to be meeting for what they call Rio Plus 20. In other words, it's been 20 years since the Rio Climate Conference. They still don't have their agenda done yet. But you know what? They've asked the U.S. to pony up 22% of the cost. That cost? $122,504,000. We only have to pay 22% of it. So, yeah, that's not a bad deal, right? We pay so that you can come up with regulatory schemes to limit our ability to earn livings and have houses. And wait a minute, Chuck, this is starting to sound like a nightmare. I think it's time that the United Nations was actually removed from the shores of the United States.
This is so awful, Barry, and there is so much awful about this, and it ties up with the sustainability movement. And people can call us paranoid, and I would invite them to get a hold of our friends of ours, the American Policy Center, and get some of the information they have on sustainability, because one of the schemes they were trying to come up with at Durban was a way to get Americans to pay a tax, to pay the bills for this thing. And in fact, what the UN wants is the power to directly tax the American people. It should be remembered that until 1913, the federal government didn't have the power to directly tax the American people. And oh, if it would only be so again, because Leviathan would be in the cage. But unfortunately, Leviathan can now pick our pockets directly, and so is out of the cage, and the giant world Leviathan would like to devour the measly little American Leviathan and become our direct puppet masters through the ability to tax us with countries like Syria and Saudi Arabia and Iraq and a number of African nations saying, we'd like to pick your pocket. And because you have money in the West, you need to pay, quote unquote, your fair share. So you need to pay more. In fact, people in developing countries will pay nothing and you will pay everything.
Well, and my question is, once they've totally picked the pockets clean of countries like the United States, who's going to be left to pay for all their shenanigans?
And that's the dirty secret, Barry. As we all know, that is why passing a tax that would confiscate all wealth in this country for redistribution would mean that on the next round of taxation, there would be nothing to tax. And that is because in a truly free market, and there is no such thing these days, but the fact is that people who have money invest in things that create wealth. And by creating wealth, we don't mean creating money. We mean taking raw materials and turning them into useful goods. And in so doing, creating the employment that requires to have the money, the jobs and the money to buy the goods that are needed. Once you take the people who are able to invest out of the picture, I mean, even Marxists admit this because they admit that every economy has to go through a capitalistic phase to build enough, quote unquote, capital in order to keep the machine going, the perpetual motion machine of economics that they have proposed. And this is our president. This is what he believes, that now that we've got the capitalistic machine running and we have production, now we can just start confiscating and redistributing the wealth and nothing will collapse. Well, ha ha ha. It's a joke. It has never worked and it won't work. And yet that's what the UN here wants us to buy into.
Right. Well, you know, Chuck, I think we need to spend a little time on this program because, you know, next week we're going to be in 2012. And It's a big year. We have a presidential election coming up. If you believe in such things, the end of the world is going to happen because the Mayan calendar runs out sometime in May. And we have a lot of instability and uncertainty ahead of us in the future with the economy and the world money markets and everything that's going on. We've now just passed laws in this country to do away with the writs of habeas corpus and the Posse Comitatus Act. We got to make some predictions about what we think 2012 is going to hold. I know we've talked about a little bit about some of this stuff on previous programs, but let's just kind of summarize and capsulize for everybody.
Yeah, and by the way, that law that we talked about, S-1867, basically was given final approval over the Christmas break. I think it was done Christmas Eve or something.
Yes.
Or maybe the day after Christmas, but it was very quietly passed, and now basically I think in a state of emergency the president can step in, and basically your 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th Amendment rights are now forfeit by the stroke of a pen. And I wouldn't be a bit shocked that now that the government has this power, it basically has to consolidate the fact that they have it by using it. So I would not be surprised if some rent-a-mobs were created as they were created with this whole Occupy movement, called OWS, in the spring, and that certain bad things begin to happen with surveillance and those kinds of things. So I think we can look forward to it. Ha ha ha. Pardon me. I'm being punished. But I don't look forward to it at all. But I think we can look forward to the government abusing this new power it has handed itself, and Christians and others have done nothing to stop. In fact, have worked to support candidates who support this particular form of legislation. So guess what, folks? You get what you pay for.
Absolutely. I think you're right on the OWS thing. I think it's what do they call the long hot summer?
Yes.
That this fall was just a test run. The other thing I think I see in the future is the housing market is not rebounding. And as a matter of fact, I think it's going to get worse. And I believe probably before we get to May, we're going to probably have a wholesale collapse of the European money markets. And I believe that people in the United States are going to have to start looking toward alternative ways of commerce. Maybe not a full-blown barter system, but I think that we're going to have to start understanding that when you base your economy on fiat money and infinite regression, pretty soon it catches up with you.
Well, that's right. You can't inflate a currency beyond its actual value forever. You end up with the German hyperinflation of 1923, where, you know, a loaf of bread costs 17 million marks. And people are being paid twice a day so they can afford to buy groceries in the morning, because by the afternoon, the pay isn't enough. We're not there yet, and we're just on the cusp of something like that. But I think next year, the crisis is going to deepen. What's really, I think, a possibility. Now, I'm not predicting this. I'm not saying it's a probability, but it's a possibility. And that is that we see some shenanigans played with elections, as we're seeing with, for instance, the Iowa caucuses. Republican Party is so desperate for certain candidates not to win that they've chosen to count votes in a quote-unquote undisclosed location, where they can be properly stolen, of course. I think you're going to see more and more and more of this kind of trickery going on at the federal level and the state levels as we go into the 2012 elections. And I wouldn't be totally surprised if somebody didn't try to suspend vote counting, or possibly not, you know, suspend voting itself.
I wouldn't see that is too far out of the question. We're already experiencing questionable antics in relation to trial balloons that are being floated by public officials about potentially suspending certain types of elections, like congressional elections. You know, in Ohio, we almost did it to ourselves by not settling on a single primary. But that'll raise all kinds of questions as to whether or not candidates are being unfairly disenfranchised from the ballot, et cetera. You're already seeing, you know, Newt Gingrich's campaign is blaming the system and, of course, a corrupt volunteer who broke the law for him not getting only his ballot in his home state of Virginia. But honestly, it got down to, well, the system must be bad. There'll be all types of questions like that coming up, seeds that'll be planted in people's minds. But you know what, Chuck, I think that honestly, there are a lot of bad things that we could see happening in 2012, but I think I see a couple of positive things that are going to occur. Number one, I do believe fairly clearly that these type of issues and the anxiety that they bring, I think is going to, I hope, maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I hope it's going to start strengthening and growing the expression of the Church of Jesus Christ. I do believe that the Church has an incredible opportunity coming forward in this time of uncertainty to speak truth, to speak comfort, and to point the way to the Savior. And honestly, we shouldn't wait for planes to knock down buildings in our country before our churches start filling up again. This should be happening on a regular basis as people pray for our country. They pray for our leaders. They pray for our future leaders. and they pray for our entire system, which with God directing it, without God superintending it and being merciful toward it, is bound to fall.
And as always, Jesus Christ is separating the wheat from the chaff and during using crisis to do so. We are completely out of time, and join us tomorrow at 12 for another Principles and Policies.